life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. Brian Smith and Anthony Askew here on episode 91 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. It is May the 11th, 2013, and joining us today is Gary Hedges.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Gary. And we are here to talk about the 1995 motion picture, Slayers the Movie.
Yay.
But first of all, let's go into our regular features. And first up, the UK anime releases for this week. Everything's coming out. There are five releases. I do believe. I will double check.
Deep stack. It's
Amazon.
A deep stack.
But yeah, first up, Black Rock Shooter, the complete series. Now, I think we said we were going to watch some of this when it first aired.
Yeah.
Did you watch any, Anthony?
Yeah, I watched a few episodes, actually. It was, tell you what, it looks fantastic. It's so nice to look at, but in terms of like the story, I was kind of very in the dark. It's a weird show. It's a weird show with like strange dream worlds and this weird interaction between a girl in a wheelchair and another girl, and whether all this is in one of their heads. I don't know. It's very bizarre, but it looks to be something I could maybe consider going back to. And the fact that it's now out on DVD would be as good a time as any. So this is certainly on the consideration list, which makes a change.
Yeah, I think I only watched one episode, and I vaguely remember enjoying the action bits and falling asleep almost during the novel.
Well, that's the thing, exactly. It's drib and drab, very bland, and then bang, you go into this weird dream world place and it gets exciting.
And it's and the fact that it's only 8 episodes.
I didn't realise it was that short. I'm sure I was about 3 or 4 episodes in and thinking, not much has happened.
Is that the whole series or?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not exactly short and sweet, I don't think. it's a bit boring, but I would like to see just what happens, what it's all about, whether it's worth picking up on DVD now, knowing it's only 8 episodes. Different story, different kettle of fish.
And it is currently, I think it's 8 episodes. I don't know, there's an OAV, I don't know if it's got the OAV on it as well, from beforehand. 300 minutes.
300 minutes.
What's that sound like? What's the maths on that? If they're 25-minute long episodes. 12. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's 12. Or maybe that running time's wrong. But I'm sure it was only 8 episodes.
See, I seem to remember it being a little bit longer than 8. That's why I was quite surprised when you did say 8. I'm just trying to see. It's
Black Rook Shooter.
Black Rook.
Anime television series, 8 episodes. There you go. So I think that running time might be wrong.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen like 3 or 4, which is a pretty big chunk considering it's 8 episodes.
Okay, next up we have Bleach Series 10. This is the bit with Nell, the good Aaron Carr. And I know this because her busty form is on the cover as opposed to her kid form.
See, I don't know who these people are.
It was a green haired, you know, the Aaron Cars. Do you know the Aaron
Cars? No, I never
they're like the they're like that. The humanoid hollows.
The hollows that started taking the mask off, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh,
if I remember correctly.
Right.
They're like the equivalent of whatever the Soul Society characters are called. I can't even remember now.
Shinigamis.
That's it, yeah.
Are you a big Bleach fan, Gary?
I was, and I got to the beginning of the Arrancar arc. You had the Arrancars and was it the Visards or Vizards, which were like the Shinigamis that had started to grow a Hallow mask. So they were both kind of half and half, but one was Hallows that was starting to become half Shinigami and the other one was the other way around, which is what Ichigo was. And he was being trained by them, and that's about when I stopped watching it because I fell drastically behind.
Well, I actually did the dirty a few weeks ago and downloaded a big torrent of them all.
So is Bleach ended now, or is it still going?
It's in its final arc in the comic.
I've got more chance of probably reading it than ever watching it, to be honest, because I feel like it's something quicker. I want to do. That as well. But what I did see back in the day, I did really like.
Oh, yeah, first 60 episodes has the best Shonen Jump adaptation pacing until JoJo came along. Through.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
But after that, because it went so fast, it then had to put loads and loads and loads of filler in it. Sort of recycling filler plots that they'd used on Yu Yu Hakusho filler.
Isn't that literally when everyone gave up?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I kind of stuck it out through the first batch of filler, started watching the Arrancar arc. I think it then hit some more filler, and I got bored, left it with the intention of going back, but then never did.
Okay, talking of Shonen Jump adaptations, another release this week is Dragon Ball Z Season 7, which is the great... I can never remember how to pronounce this. Saiyaman. And World Tournament Sagas.
Mm.
Now, I've not got this far into Dragon Ball Z. Are these actual comic sagas or filler sagas? I know Great Saiyaman, I think that's a comic.
See, I forget which one the World Tournament was. What's that referring to?
Well, the World Tournament is just before the arrival... I believe it's just before the arrival of Majin Buu. So it's the World Tournament. And
I remember.
The one-on-one matches, and then it's during that tournament that the Majin Buu saga kicks off.
Yeah, that's right.
If I remember correctly, that saga had this bit had a fair amount of comedy in it, because you obviously had the whole element of the Great Saiyaman wanting to keep himself... obviously that was a disguise for Gohan, and he doesn't want anyone to know it's him, sort of thing.
I didn't like the Great Saiyaman very much. Didn't like this. It's only a short saga, thankfully, but it's, as a character, I wasn't interested.
I liked Videl, and she features in this a lot, because she's kind of got the whole vigilante thing going, and she sees him as a rival, not knowing he's Gohan, kind of thing.
Yeah. See, I just wanted Goku, so... Not interested in Gohan or Goten or whichever son he's got. I know which one he goes to, but yeah.
Oh, apparently, yeah. The other one is in the comic as well. It's volume 37.
Ah.
Good stuff. Yeah.
Okay, next up is Mayo Cheeky, which is some guff about a guy who's afraid of girls having to help out a cross-dressing butler. And if you
A synopsis, it sounds great. He gets nosebleeds. I think this is a one to watch.
Sounds like we've gone back in time.
If you guessed it was based on a light novel, you are correct. Full points to you. And the last release for this week is Street Fighter 2 on Blu-ray.
Wow. Well, I did watch the trailer that came out. Obviously, I know it's only a trailer, and I don't know how true it's going to look to that trailer, but it looks pretty swish.
Have they redubbed it?
No, I don't think anything...
Do we get the glorious original dub?
I think it's going to be the original dub, but...
Will it have the original soundtrack, though? That's not the original soundtrack. It'll probably have the original soundtrack. It won't have the replacement soundtrack.
I wouldn't like to say. So obviously, it's uncensored as well. So the shower scene's all there.
I was just going to say, I was trying to think what was censored.
It wasn't, but it was censored in the US, you see.
Okay. I was going to say, I can't remember the shower scene being overly graphic, but...
Yeah. We got it as was. The only thing we had censored was the Japanese music replaced by the one they'd cooked up.
And they probably switched all the names around because the Japanese have...
Oh, yes, that as well, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you want to hear more about that, go back and listen to our Street Fighter 2 episode, which we did a few weeks ago.
Absolutely.
Righty-ho, that's your lot for UK anime releases this week. So, Gary, what you watch?
What you
play be more appropriate?
With me, probably what you play. What am I watching at the moment? Not a great deal. Still plodding through Dexter, trying to keep up and avoid spoilers, because I know that Season 8 is going to be the finale, and I'm still on Season 5. And I'm now watching Lost Girl Season 3, because that's just started on Sci-Fi. And again, trying to avoid spoilers because I've got friends that couldn't wait for it to come on Sci-Fi, so they've been downloading it as it airs in, I think it's Canada, because I think it's a Canadian series. So yeah, mainly watching those. I don't know if you guys have heard of Lost Girl. It's kind of a...
I've heard of this.
It's kind of a set in a world where you've got kind of mythical creatures that are collectively referred to as Fae, but they account for things like Mongolian death worms, vampires... incubus, succubus, werewolves, and the lead character is a character called Bo, who isn't brought up as a Fae and doesn't realise the Fae world exists. She's actually Fae herself, but she doesn't find out until she sleeps with her first boyfriend and wakes up finding him dead because she's a succubus, and that's what they do. So she finds out that there's this Fae world that exists that's kind of in plain sight but hidden. So it kind of has the premise where there are Fae members of society at all levels, even high up. So there are sections of the police force that are Fae, and obviously the whole thing with the Fae is that they cover up their existence from regular humans who shouldn't know they exist. So the plot line for Bo is basically wanting to find out who she is, why the hell she was abandoned, that kind of stuff, and it's. By season three, it's kind of progressed on from there, and she now kind of does like a sort of like an A-team type thing where she basically advertises in classifieds to take on detective jobs from humans that would not normally be believed by the police, usually because they're Fae related, but obviously the humans don't know. And it kind of goes from there, and there's a whole kind of light and dark Fae thing where essentially the light are good and the dark are bad, but it's not quite that straightforward, partly to do with the way they treat humans. So The light fae will not harm humans at all, whereas the dark fae obviously still want to keep themselves hidden but have no problem killing humans if necessary. And then because Bo wasn't brought up as a fae, she's classed as unaligned, so she gets some interesting perks with that. So she ends up taking on jobs from both light and dark, kind of gets the best of both worlds sort of thing. So it's an interesting one. I've been kind of following it since the original first season, but it's remained interesting enough that I've kept watching it.
This sounds a lot like somebody wanted to make a World of Darkness TV show but didn't want to pay White Wolf any money.
Sounds like it. Yeah, it could well be. I mean, certainly some of the elements in it. One of the things that I did find amusing is the guy that plays the character in it called Dyson, who's a werewolf. The exact same guy ended up playing a werewolf in the fourth Underworld film. It was kind of ironic. It was like, hang on a minute, this is the guy that's in the Lost Girl series as a werewolf. Oh, wait, look, he's a werewolf in this film. But
he's typecast.
He's now been typecast as a werewolf. And he looks like, what's his name, Chris Martin from Coldplay.
Oh, God.
Yeah, particularly because White Wolf put out a revision of their Changeling game called Changeling the Lost about the Fae and living in the real world, if I remember correctly.
So is Fae a well-known mythological term?
It's like fairy.
Right. That makes more sense.
The fairy folk.
I did see, I've not heard people talk, I don't know whether it's for me that Lost Girl thing. We'll see.
Right, what about you, Anthony? What do you watch?
What I watch? I have been watching another sci-fi show, actually, on the Sci-Fi Channel, called Defiance, which is a obviously a sci-fi show that, interesting enough, ties in with an MMO.
I've been hearing good things about this.
Well, what, about the MMO or the series?
Both, actually.
Ooh, someone's telling porty pies. Someone's telling lies.
But no, not the two intertwined, though.
Well, in all fairness, I've heard the MMO does something pretty good, and that is incorporate a third-person shooter in an MMO kind of setting, which is pretty bold, but I've heard it's pretty dull, so I'm kind of not too fussed about that. That's not what drew us in. What drew us in is I seen it, and I thought, you know what, I need something new to watch. So I tried it out, and it's basically Earth, a few years after some alien invasion, which at the moment they've not really revealed too much about, and it's like this. Louisville, whatever it's called.
Louisville,
that's the one, and it's set in there, and it's like this colony of people that live there with all different races and stuff, and it's all pretty not much happening at the moment. I'm willing to give it a chance because there's not much else to watch at the moment for me. So other than that, it's pretty dull. It's pretty dull. It really is. It's I don't know if you ever watched Terra Nova.
Anyway, no.
But I think it's, which got cancelled after its first series, I think it's going to end up being Terra Nova because it looks like they've thrown a lot of money at it, especially with this big...
I don't know, it's sci-fi, so they haven't got a lot of money to throw.
Well, just when I say that, I mean just in regards to this game crossover thing.
Well, yeah, the tie-in thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of work.
The game keeps saying, please watch the TV series. I'm assuming it's now saying, please, really, do go watch the TV series.
Well, exactly. I mean, the main character is about as... exciting as an empty cup of tea. He's so boring. He might grow on us, but at the moment he's so cliche, not in a good way though. So I don't know. I'll give it a few episodes. And I got back into Toriko as well, which I took a long break from, and I'm slowly. Well, I spent a few hours trying to realize where I was at in the show, which is very hard to find out. It's very tough to do that. And so I've skipped a few episodes. Toriko is currently in the gourmet world. And it's kind of exactly how it was as I left it. But I've got the time to watch it, I feel, at the moment, because I'm not watching a great deal else. So that's nice. And obviously I've been watching Game of Thrones, which is still fantastic. And that's what I watch.
Okay, I've not been watching anything.
Where have you been?
I've been playing Dragon's Dogma.
Dark Risen.
Yes, particularly because with the Dark Risen add-on re-release thing, it was only 18 quid in Sainsbury's. So for that, you get the original game and the add-on.
Oh, cool. I saw the advertising for it obviously in the shops, but I wasn't sure if it was an add-on or a sequel or...
No, nor was I. to the point where I was going to buy the original second-hand in-game, and then they told me the re-release had got the original with it. It doesn't really scream it on the cover, which you think...
No, it doesn't. And on the back, it makes no reference to saying whether you do or do not require the original Dragon's Dogma disc.
Yeah, I think it says it in small writing on the back that it contains the original, but nothing on the cover. Where you think, if you're selling it, you'd want to drive that home, because presumably they've done that because they didn't sell enough of the original one in the first place.
Mm.
Apparently, if you've got the original, it gives you loads of in-game things if you buy the add-on.
Oh, okay.
To make up for the fact you've just bought the game twice.
I bet that never happened with Ninja Gaiden.
But it's a lot of fun. It's I've not played Dark Souls, so I can't say. I'm sure it's not as harsh as Dark Souls, but it definitely feels harsher than, say, Skyrim, which is the most recent role-playing game, and obviously has dragons in it as well. And I've just killed my first dragon-type monster in it, and the fight to fight that dragon was so much more fun than Skyrim's dragon fights. So much more fun. So you had so much to do rather than just sort of whatever your particular one tactic you had.
Yeah, spam one attack.
Waiting for it to land so you can actually do something to it. Whereas this one, they're flying, but the tails tend to drag along the ground, so you can grab hold of the tail and then climb up the dragon.
Oh, cool.
And it has loads of other big monsters as well, which you can clamber on and have to do nice. Attack various parts of their bodies as you're fighting them. And it's got... I thought it got a fairly noticeable Berserk influence, and then I found a seller who I helped set up shop in one of the missions, who then started selling you armor, which looks exactly like Griffith's armor from Berserk. And he also has another set of armor, which looks exactly like Guts armor. So I think the influence is worn fairly proudly on its sleeve. And it's a bit harsh with saves, in that you can screw missions up, and the way the save game works, quite often you'll never have a chance to have another go at doing the mission. Unless you go way, way back to the last time you slept at an inn rather than the last time you just saved.
By failing a mission, is there like any other consequence?
Sometimes you can just partially fail a mission.
Ah, right.
I think there's one where... The one I've done most notably is there's this shadow fortress you're trying to free from goblins.
Yeah.
But at the same time as you're doing it, when you do the final attack, you've also got to protect the captain of this unit you've been sent with you, and he's a bit frail. So first time I tried it, I got onto the battlements and got thrown off by a Cyclops, which killed me instantly. So then it took me back to the last time it saved, which wasn't too bad. But then the next time we went through, the captain got killed, and at which point it said, defeated. Go back and report your defeat. It didn't, like, end the mission, but it just ended the mission in a different way from... It wasn't like, you can't complete this mission now. It's, you've completed this mission because you've been defeated.
Yeah.
And then it saved it, the game, straight there. So if I wanted to redo it, I'd have had to go back to my waypoint, which was many, many hours before then.
That's pretty good, though. That's,
That makes it a bit different.
Yeah, a bit of a risk.
Yeah, and I've done escort missions where I've accidentally got the guy I was escorting killed, so... That does the end of those missions. So lots of times a mission can end, and if you do another mission, sometimes that prevents other missions from being completed because their purposes are across purposes. So you can no longer do it. So it's quite interesting. I think there's, once you do it, then you get to do it again in a different mode. And there's like loads of different classes, but you can switch class throughout. And the other good thing is when you create a character... You also create this character called a pawn, who's like your sidekick. And so your parties are made out of you, your main pawn, and then two other pawns you've hired, which are pawns which have been created by other people playing the game. So while there's no actual online multiplayer, everybody who plays the game are uploading these pawns into everybody else's worlds.
Interesting. And so, do you get to pick the other pawns from a pool?
You can, yes. Yeah. You can go into these rifts. There'll be bunches which are walking around town and in the countryside. But you can also go to these rift stones and then do like a search for what you're looking for.
That's pretty good.
And you can, ones which are your level and lower cost you nothing. And then I can't remember what the points are, but there's certain points you collect.
Yeah.
And then you can spend them to buy ones which are higher level than you. And you also earn those when people hire your pawn in their games. And they can send them back with gifts as well. So, yeah. So, it's quite interesting. So, at the moment, I've got two pawns who are, like, 10 levels higher than I am. because people have hired my pawn, and I've got loads of points for it. So, sometimes your choice in what you're going to buy for equipment is, do I buy equipment for myself to make myself tougher, or do I buy equipment for my pawn to make them more attractive for people to hire?
Ah,
and then give me points to buy pawns who are even more powerful.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's a bit of football management involved as well, in terms of managing your party. Yeah, so it's very interesting. It's the world is not super big compared to playing Skyrim, but I'm sure, and it's a Capcom game, so there is ridiculous amounts of expensive DLC for it.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
Right, on to our next feature, which is our weekly retro recap. And this time it is Zatch Bell, a.k.a. Gash Bell, or whatever it's Konajiki no Gash
Bell. Konajiki Gash no Bell. This is not a Nobel Prize winner, I know that.
Right, what happens in this show? I've written an A4 essay.
How? There is a lot.
A lot happens in this. It's the first episode of a Shonen Jump story, so it has to get over its concept. It's not. Is it Shonen Jump? It's some Shonen comic, anyway. So, for his birthday, 14-year-old Kyo Takahime has sent a feral boy that his father found in the woods in England.
As you do.
And apparently this boy is going to train Kyo not to skip school and generally not be an antisocial shut-in. And he also breathes lightning and comes accompanied with an unreadable grimoire. So to avoid having to spend time at home with the boy, who is called Gash, Kyo finally goes to school, which makes his mum very happy. But Gash follows him, cunningly disguised as a bag.
It looks so ridiculous.
And Gash explains to Kyo the amazing plan he has to get him friends. He's going to plan to be attacked by bullies, and then Kyo will come and save him. And Kyo pretends to go through this, but plans to leave Gash on his own. And having been told that bullies live on the roof of the school, Gash heads up there and meets Susume, who is Kyo's not quite girlfriend. I think in the dub she introduces herself saying, "I'm Kyo's girlfriend," but she doesn't know it yet.
Oh, nice.
Because I watched both. I watched the dub and the original Japanese for this.
Whoa, dedication!
I did. I was interested to see what the difference was. The difference was exactly what you think it was.
Yeah.
The pair of them end up being threatened by your stereotypical giant anime delinquent who looks as though he thought he was being cast in a Fist of the North Star remake. And
nice.
Gash proceeds to get beaten up, all the while claiming that Kyo will save him. We should stress at this point that Gash, for all intents and purposes, looks like about the height of a ventriloquist dummy.
It's true.
He is like a small child being beaten up by this giant teenager. And then through the power of guilt and then embarrassment, Kyo tries to save the day and also gets beaten up. So Gash and Susume move on to another plan, which is to pray to the heavens to be saved, which they are when a boy on a skateboard lands on the thug's head. This boy is Ido, who also has a kid like Gash with him called Hyde, and he wants to make Susume his girlfriend and attacks Kyo with wind magic using a book similar to the one Kyo was sent. Kyo figures out that the one word he managed to read earlier in the grimoire is what caused Gash to fire lightning when he first met him, because he'd accidentally said the word that causes Gash to launch lightning at his mouth. And he casts it again deliberately, making Gash blast Ido. After the battle, Gash has no memory of shooting out the lightning, but across the city we see reaction from various other people who've got similar children with them to Gash, and we discover that Gash is apparently some sort of demon.
Yeah. That's during getting his hair washed.
And then Kyo discovers a clue himself about Gash's origins, where he discovers two horns as he's washing Gash's hair. And that is pretty much the first episode of Gash Bell.
You make it sound so substantial.
It is substantial.
I mean, it's got the, you know, it's like getting a big bowl piled with food, but it's all rubbish food.
What?
Brian.
I liked this. I mean, the animation's not great, but there's things I really liked about it.
Oh, I mean, I can excuse the animation. I just...
Like all the reaction shots everybody has. People have extreme reaction shots to things, which I...
That's what wins you over.
It is, yeah.
I mean, I do kind of like the little demon kids things. I don't like the look of Gash. I think he's drew the short straw with that one. Because he's like a boy, but he's a girl.
He's a boy.
Yeah, well, yeah, you see that pretty clearly. Yeah, he wears like a dress. Take a dress.
I think it's supposed to be like a little Lord Fauntleroy type smock. It's from England, right. You see.
Yeah, like Friar Tuck. True.
Yes.
He's got like a little bow on the top of it as well.
I just don't like the look of him, but all the others look really cool.
You know, like even when he's running insanely fast towards the bully. I thought that was my favourite shot of the show, when he looks really angry.
I mean, I think it's got potential. I will give it credit where credit's due. It is one episode I've watched, and because I did actually watch it not when it first came out, but way back when, after it wasn't too new and it wasn't obviously too old as it is now. But I did watch a little bit of it back then.
Did it air in the UK?
I seem to imagine it being on Fox, or is it Fox Kids, Jetix? I seem to think it. I don't know. I'm probably just imagining, because Jetix seems like the kind of channel that would air a show like this.
Yeah,
like completely. It looks that style. But I'm willing to give it another chance. I'm surprised, but I kind of want to watch the next episode just to see what other demons are on offer.
Yeah, it's got a bit of the JoJo's to it as well. Where the demons are like stands, but adorable.
Yeah.
According to Wiki, it ran on Cartoon Network, Jetix, and Toon Disney.
They couldn't get enough of it. They wanted it everywhere. Oh, that's handy. I thought it was on Jetix, but is it a long series?
It is, 150 episodes.
Oh, well.
Because we'll reach the end of if we really like it, we won't watch all of those because we will reach the end of 2013 and we'll have to move on to the things which started in 2004.
Yeah. We're not going to get that. I was borderline giving up this week, so okay. I'm feeling generous.
You thought you had to apologise for making me watch Mr. Stain.
It wasn't that bad. But yeah, I would like to see good demons and some good fights. I hope it's not just...
Well, he knows what he's doing now. We kind of know what he's doing.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they'll all get an explanation of what this battle's going to be next week. Okay, let's move on to Slayers the Movie. From 1995, directed by Hiroshi Watanabe, who directed most of the Slayers movies and OAVs, but none of the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And also by Kazuo Yamazaki, the guy who took over Urusei Yatsura post Mamoru Oshii. And this is his only Slayers outing, but he also wrote and storyboarded the film. And yeah, this came out August 1995 in a double bill with Legend of Crystania. And having heard Anthony grumble about it already, we should have made him watch Legend of Crystania with it. And we would have got, you might have got a bit of perspective. About
what is that one so bad?
No, but it's like, well, we can talk about it now. It's a record of Lotus War related movie. So imagine how Slayers treats role playing and fantasy elements with its tongue in its cheek.
This is the
then Lotus War plays it with it's completely
tongue in its own ass. Sorry.
Serious business.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a serious... This is very important art, even though it's just write-ups of somebody's role-playing game campaign. And it's based on the novels by Hajime Kanzaki, which is normally illustrated by Rui Araizumi. And those novels started in 1989, but I think the ones which have got Naga in started in 91. And, okay, first up, what I wanted to ask was, is this the first time you've seen any this film or any of Slayers, Anthony?
Yes.
I know Gary has.
Yes. It was always something I knew of and I was aware of that people liked it and it existed, obviously, but this is the first exposure I've had, which may influence the way I feel.
I thought this was, but then having thought about it, I thought that this was the first thing I saw in Slayers, but I think I might have seen some episodes of the TV show when I went to Minamicon 2. Back in, which was 1996, I think. But Slayers the Movie was one of the very first fan subs I ever got on VHS. After going to Minami and seeing the website address of the UK fan subbing group at the time. And when I got to university back in the autumn, I went straight to the internet and went, oh, let's look them up and I'll start ordering fan subs from them.
Did they make much money, those kind of groups?
Well, no, they didn't do it for money because, of course, it was fan subs. These are not for profit.
Oh, so you actually got them sent for free?
No, you had to pay for the cost of shipping and the tape.
Oh, that's pretty good. And that's
production cost based.
And I think they were pretty good at that. There were ones in America who kind of were making money off it and pretending for it.
That's a good cause. It feels like a good cause.
But yeah, I think I got that. The first four episodes of Gundam Wing and the first seven episodes of Vision of Escaflowne. I think there might have been one other thing as well. But it was like you were limited to like getting three VHS tapes and like pick and choosing on which ones you wanted. How about you, Gary? How did you get introduced to Slayers?
Trying to remember which way round it was. It was definitely the Leader and Naga stuff that I saw first before the TV series, but I don't know if it was this specific film or if I watched the OAV or OVA, whichever way round it is, whether it was those that I watched first. I think it might have been the motion picture, actually. And it was a friend of mine that had it on tape back when it had come out, but I think it was actually the official... English release that he bought.
The UK, I think most of the OAVs got released by ADV, and the movies. And is it MVM have got the TV series? I think if I remember correctly. But that came out much later. Yeah, they've got the TV series.
Yeah, because I ended up getting the TV series importing the American DVDs, but the original Slayers, I ended up having both the film and the OAVs, the original VHS tapes. But no, a friend of mine introduced it to me, and it was one of the first animes that I'd seen following... I think it was... I'd seen, obviously, Akira, and I'd started watching from... After liking Akira, I then got into AD Police and the whole Cyberpunk collection. From that, I went on to Bubblegum Crisis, and then Slayers was the first thing that I watched after that. So for me, it was kind of different, because up until that point, I just assumed that anime was all cyberpunk. So I then saw the Slayers motion picture, and I actually really liked it, because for me, it had the whole kind of Dungeons and Dragons vibe, but with humor, and I absolutely love that. So I saw this, fell in love with the Slayers franchise after seeing the movie. I ended up getting myself a copy of it. I then got the OAVs and watched those. It was funny because I then didn't pick up the series of Slayers until a few years later when I imported the DVD. So up until this point, I always, when everyone referred to Slayers, in my head, I was always thinking Lina and Naga. Whereas most people, when you say Slayers, they assume Lina, Gowri, and the gang. So.
Yeah, I've only seen the first TV series. In fact, if I look across, I can still see my VHS tapes.
Ooh.
that I ordered and imported many moons ago. But I think I've seen most of the OAVs, but at conventions rather than having bought them. They're the sort of thing I'd watch at a convention rather than actually pay money to own. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're actually available anymore with ADV. Disappearing.
The OAVs are available on a DVD box set.
Uh-huh.
I think it's called like Slayer's Book of Spells, and they basically put all of the Lina and Naga OAVs together in a DVD box set. I don't know if it's who it is that's released that though, but I got that because I replaced my VHS copies with the DVD ones.
Yeah, Anthony.
Yeah.
Before watching this, had you any expectations or impressions of what Slayers was going to be about?
Well, that's the thing. I think that's a big part as to how this kind of caught us off guard almost. I don't know how, but I used to always get this confused with Shadow Skill. I don't know how. Like,
Spiky hair, is that?
I don't know, because I couldn't even remember the name of Shadow Skill. I just had to Google it there, because I remember having that downloaded, fan subs, watching that, and then not finishing it, and then hearing about Slayers, and I was kind of, I seen Slayers in an AMV. I don't know why I associated the two.
Shadow Skills heroine also has red hair.
It's probably a good good logic behind it. That's for certain. If that's the case, but
they're from around the same era. They've got that. Shadow Skill 90s or early 2000s? I think late 90s.
I think it's got to be.
98.
98, ooh, borderline.
But the comic's from 92, 98, so...
Ah, right.
Yeah, the comic looks even more like Slayers than the anime does.
So. See, maybe I'm just totally onto something there and something's not picked up on. But I didn't know what to expect from the, like... I was never sure whether it was an action, complete comedy, or what. I didn't know what. Like, obviously, I knew it was a fantasy setting. Like, is she a slayer of some sort? Is she a dragon? I knew nothing. Like, and that's why watching this, you turn it on and it's kind of right. So, what they? Why they're there? What's going on here? not because the story's complicated. It doesn't totally throw you into the deep end. It does everything in a way that is pretty... It could easily appeal to a first-time viewer, but just so happens that I kind of wanted a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about... First of all, we should probably talk about the two heroines, which is Lina Inverse and Naga the Serpent, Naga the White Serpent, Naga the Goldfish Feces.
What?
That is what Lina refers to her as, because she's always following her around. So, Lina Inverse is at this point in time supposedly 13 to 14 years old. because it takes place before the TV series.
Yep.
And she is one of the world's most famous magic users. Well, people have heard of her name, even if they don't know what she looks like, because obviously it's a fancy setting. They haven't got photos or TV. And then there's also Naga the Serpent, who is older than her, bustier than her, wears less clothes than her, but isn't such a good magic user. Yep. Also often drunker than her. And, yeah, so they, in this film, they go to Mipros, which is a Brigadoon or Dragon's Palace-style island, which is doubles as a hot spring resort where time is broken. So the island isn't there all the time. And they discover that people on this island are being controlled by jellyfish-themed merchandise, which turns out to be the plan of a part of the plot of a frog demon called Joyrock. And during this time, Lena is contacted in her dreams by a character called Rowdy the Sage to try and convince her to fight the demon. This all eventually leads to Lena being sent back in time to prevent the events which started all of Mipros's problems in the first place. That pretty much covers the plot of the film.
Yeah, it's,
The reason it takes 60 minutes to do all that is because it's more a series of sketches than it is one flowing narrative. It reminded me a bit of early Terry Pratchett novels, the way they feel, where it doesn't feel like he's got a full story. He's like got loads of ideas for sketches to put the characters in, and then there'll be
string them together.
Some sort of connective tissue to bring them all together. So, Anthony, what were your initial impressions having watched it?
Well, it just feels like a bit. I love the whole time travel thing. I'm a sucker for time travel in anything, if you know it. If it's done well, and this, not that they could have really went wrong with the time travel in this. It's pretty simple time travel, but they do it well. I do really like Lena. I think she's a great main character, and if there's one positive to take from this, it's her. She herself alone is such a redeemable point of this film.
Well, you may like the TV series more than the film, then, because there's no Naga. If Naga was a negative for you,
not necessarily. I just felt that I wanted to, maybe I was too inquisitive by it all, because it obviously struck an interest. Because I was why are they? What's this rivalry all about? Why are they rivals? How do they know each other? You know, that
I'm
kind
of
thing.
I'm not sure they've ever got into that in any of the anime.
Yeah, they've kind of never really have explained exactly how and when they met. I think the gist of it is that Naga looks at Lena as somebody that, although she won't admit, is a better witch or sorceress than her. So for that reason, Naga follows her about, because she decides that... I think it's kind of a, if she follows her about, she will get better kind of thing.
And sometimes she doesn't intend to follow her about. They just they have a habit of constantly running into each other as well.
Yeah. There'll be like an artifact of interest that they'll hear about that they might think will help them become better sorceresses or whatever. So Lena will go after it, and coincidentally Naga would end up going after it.
Or there'll be two rival parties, and each of them want to hire a wizard, and so the two wizards they happen to hire are Lena and Naga.
Yeah.
So sometimes they work together, sometimes they work against each other.
Yeah. I also want to know, what is Lena doing? This is more in reference to the series, I think. Is she travelling around for an aim? Or is she?
No.
Why is everyone frightened of her?
Because she knows the dragon slave spell is pretty much it.
Is that just her fire stuff?
That's the really big spell she casts, which blows up half the wood.
Okay.
And then at the end, she casts on the Sword of Light. You know, her aim is basically to acquire treasure and money and eat food.
They're known as the bandit killers, aren't they, as well?
Yes.
So for that reason, bandits know of her, because they know that if Lena encounters bandits, she will either kill them and steal their treasure, or just steal their treasure.
Yeah, she's a role-playing game character. As people actually play role-playing game characters, rather than the ones where people are like, I'm going to write my life's work in the form of the D&D adventure.
Yeah.
Like, it's rather... To the point, the bit which illustrates it best is the bit where Rowdy the Sage is trying his hardest to make a go to this particular location, which just reminds me a lot of when you've written a role playing game adventure and the players don't want to go where you planned them to go.
And so you need to follow that person, the prophet. No, we really don't. We want to go this way.
Yeah, or not do anything at all, at least.
Yeah, no, I've been
there. I've had players like that as well.
I've been that player as well on occasion.
Oh, certainly. But yeah, that was total role-playing game railroading going on by Rowdy the Sage there. And then, of course, also by the King and Queen when she wakes up as they're yelling in her ear the same message that he's sending her. Now, that's basically, it kind of helps if you played the role-playing game at any point in your life to recognise sort of her behaviour particularly. Because often all the other characters are sort of heroes in their own way, or trying to be. They are still kind of a bit like various role-playing game players, I can imagine, like going overboard in the case of Amelia, or just not getting anything that's going on in the case of Gowrie.
Yeah. They kind of each one's its own kind of archetype.
Yeah, of an actual player rather than a fantasy character.
But there is actually, in the series, though, there is a kind of overarching plot, more so than the OAVs and obviously the movies are all individual standalones. But in the series, you might like that more because there is more of an overarching plot. There is something that Lena is hunting. So there's kind of... She gets sidetracked a lot with different mini-adventures, but there is kind of a end goal, if you like.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the setting. It has a lot of things that it seems to just nail on the head. I like this whole adventure thing, as I've covered in the past. I love people going around, meeting new people, them having an impact on that story, then off they go and do their own thing, and you never have to see them again. Now, I'd like to think the series is more of an adventure than what this was, which is just seems just confined, quite boring at times story. I think it's the story itself that disappoints.
I don't know. Do you not like the comedy in particularly the first half?
I didn't particularly find that much funny. And maybe that was lost on me because of not knowing the characters.
I'm not sure. I mean, I've written down my favourite things. I'm not sure they relate.
Necessarily lost, but I think if I knew the characters a little more, I would probably have a bit more of a chuckle.
So things I've wrote down, some things I like. I like the fight with the guys who introducing what ranking they hold and being the toughest people in the town.
Yeah.
And there's the illusionist who needs props and actors for his illusions.
Oh, I like that bit, yeah.
Naga conjuring the rock dragon golem.
Which was headstrong.
Yes. and the railroading and King and Queen sharing into her ears. The jellyfish sea cucumber fight. A lot of the early stuff. I mean, I it was funnier than I'd remembered it. Because I hadn't watched it for a long time, I thought, this isn't going to live up to how I remembered it. But I was surprised that I still found the stuff which was supposed to be funny. And the stuff which was the story, I will agree, is fairly inconsequential. Mm. But at the same time, I think that's supposed to be the point. It's like they go to the dungeon and they go, oh, I bet there's loads of traps ahead. So all they do is just cut a hole through every floor to take themselves straight down to the bottom level of the dungeon.
See, I like that. I like that, you know, kind of displaying this huge problem and then just, you know, tongue-in-cheek, as you mentioned, just overwriting that and rather than kind of going down this daft part of a story that would have been drawn out.
Yeah, I don't think Joyrock's actually a worse villain when he shows his true form, I think, than when you see him as just the little frog. I think he works better as a villain, as just the annoying little frog, than the monstrous.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well.
And his sort of hot hench demons are all very generic, just there to get blasted. I mean, this is part of the problem, particularly in a lot of the OAVs in the movies, I think, is that Lena and Naga are just so powerful that they just steamroll through everything.
Yeah.
which is thrown against them. I mean, that happens like in the TV series as well, but it tends to be whoever the arch villain is in the TV series is ridiculously powerful too.
Yeah, you got the kind of, it's more of the like build up for the big fight, and then you kind of, the big fights where, yeah, there's a lot more of a balancing act.
Yeah, and plus you tend to have other characters around who are more frail, sort of, than leaders.
Yeah, it's like Dragon Ball Z syndrome. So it's like, here's a new big villain. Okay, right, let's throw these five or six different characters at it one by one. And then after they all get beat, right, okay, now Lena will step in and mop the floor with it. Whereas, that's part of the fun.
It is, yeah. Once you get used to the idea. And I'm not sure whether... It was because I think I'd seen like a few episodes early on of the original TV series before I saw this, which obviously doesn't have Naga, so Naga was still completely new to me. But I think I already knew about the Dragon Slave and had it put into my head about how ridiculously powerful Lena was. So it didn't bother me too much that she just steamrolled through all the threats.
How does Naga compare to her companion in the series?
In the series, the main companion is Gowri, who is, I believe, descended from Rowdy the Sage. He has the sword.
Yeah, they've got the same surname, haven't they, according to Wiki?
Gabriev. And he's got the light sword as well, whatever it's called. Sword of Light.
Which Lena keeps asking him if she can borrow. and he gets annoyed with, because obviously that's his one kind of thing he's got going for him.
Yes, because he's as thick as two short planks.
Yeah.
He's like this really naive, stupid, blonde-haired swordsman who's a really good swordsman, but he is an idiot. And then there's also Amelia, who's this super... wants to be like a super-heroic white magic
user. Kind of the whole justice thing.
Yes. Along with her dad, Prince Phil.
Yeah, they do a lot of posing. They do a lot of posing and stuff. Prince Phil's a little bit like Hercule from... or Mr. Satan from Dragon Ball Z.
Oh,
if you remember him.
Yeah.
Except that he's
competent.
He's not weak. He's actually quite somewhat powerful.
Yeah, and he's also Naga's father.
Mm. Oh.
But that's only hinted at in the TV series.
Yeah, they've never had Amelia and Naga be in the same place at the same time, but it's kind of almost given away that they're blatantly sisters, because when Amelia talks to Lena, she references her sister that's older than her and bigger than her, that kind of done a runner years ago kind of thing.
Yeah, I think also in some places Naga references her past, which sounds exactly pretty much like Amelia's upbringing.
Yeah.
And then there's Zelgardis, who is, he's half Gollum, isn't he?
Half Gollum, yeah, that was it. He's got Gollum skin, but he's
something
like
weirdly
an age.
And I've not seen beyond the first, so I don't know about Zelos.
Yeah, Zelos is... It's hard to describe who Zelos is without major spoilers, but he's a character that kind of comes into it that's somewhat mysterious, never gives anything away. His catchphrase line is, "That is a secret."
And, is he the one with the green face?
No, that's
Zelgardis. Zelos is the one whose eyes are always closed, and he's always got a smile on his face. He's got purple hair. He's like a mage with a staff. But whenever he opens his eyes, he looks evil as fuck, because his eyes are like red and he looks frowning. Zelos kind of comes into it, and he tags along with the rest of the group, and doesn't seem to have a purpose to it, and. The group don't really know why he's following them. And whenever they ask him, he just says that the reason he's following them is a secret and he can't tell them. But when you see him fight, you get the impression that he's, again, a lot more powerful than he lets on. He kind of doesn't give too much away, but I can't really elaborate much more than that. But you'll kind of find out if you ever watch the series. But he's an interesting character, to say the least.
I'm interested to watch the series, because it's got to be better than the film. And that's not necessarily me being like a total, you know, negative Nancy about the film. But I think I was just really looking forward to watching it, and I almost felt let down. because I didn't know what to expect, and because I know, like yourself, Gary, you're so fond of it, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Me and Gary like similar stuff. This is going to be great. But no.
I'm trying to think which ones I liked the best. There's... It's the one with the golem makers. I think that's one of the
Others. Yeah, that's a very good one. They each make a golem in the style of a particular sorceress.
Yeah, because there's ones where they're kind of OEVs and...
You've got the other films as well, and the films all have Slayers, and it's usually like Slayers Great or Slayers Gorgeous or Slayers Excellent.
Yeah, and they're varying lengths, and sometimes when they're shorter, they're better because they can just focus. Yeah, Slayers Great's the one with the golem manufacturing.
That one is quite hilarious.
Yeah, again, because I think they're normally within in double features with other things because they're quite short. And there's radio dramas, role playing games, video games, all sorts of things. Anything else I want to say? Because obviously it's as I mentioned, storyboarded by your man from Urusei Yatsura, Kazuo Yamazaki, and there's a couple of spots which I thought looked really Urusei Yatsura like, particularly the way the fat jellyfish summoning wizard moved.
Kind of a little wobble.
Yeah. Sort of his body language, and also a bit of the swimming baths or the hot springs wizard as well.
Mm.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
But there's other bits which are so 1990s, like the names of the bath attendants.
What are they called, like shampoo and...
Yeah, something like that. One's called Loofah.
Genius.
Anything else I wanted to mention?
There was the nod to Dragonhearth as well, with the bit where Naga encounters the slime halves.
I'm not sure whether that is Dragonhearth or just a reference to... they're just supposed to be slimes, and a reference to whatever it's called, Dragon Quest.
No, she actually says to the slime half, she tells them to go and bother a dragon half.
Yeah. Oh, okay, gotcha. I missed that bit. Okay, that makes sense.
I don't know if the two shows were produced or had any of the same staff on it or anything like that, but it may have just been a subtle nod to it.
Now, do you think they were just attracted to her because they thought her breasts were also slimes?
Possibly. Okay. They did pay that attention. They did kind of pay attention to that, didn't they, as well?
Yeah, so when she was asleep, they were sleeping on top of her by her breasts.
Their pillows.
After she drunk herself to sleep. Anything else you want to mention?
I'm going to go and watch the series.
Okay.
Because I feel I owe it to myself and all those Slayers fans out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of Slit series because there's Slayers, Slayers Next, Slayers Try. Then, many years later, 2008, there was Slayers Revolution, and then Slayers Evolution R.
Those two I've not actually watched, I must admit.
And Iacon used to be named after different Slayers series, so there was
it did, didn't it? The Next and Again and stuff. It was like following the returns.
And whose idea was that?
I don't know.
They obviously were inspired by the movie titles.
Yeah, I think they gave up after Iacon Revolution.
We wanted to do Iacon the motion picture. Might not have been as effective, but...
As somebody already tried to do that with a convention. Take an entire year to do that rather than running a convention.
Need to do Iacon Premium.
No, it'll be the last one.
It's coming up.
Yeah, not long.
Get your Sunday Night Live skits submitted.
Yeah, you're going to go down in history.
See, I'm actually staying the Sunday evening now, so does that mean I have to go and watch that?
Not at all, bro.
Good, I'm not going to. Or do I go because it's the last one ever?
Yeah. Get a bit boozed down you.
It's that whole, if you don't know, you'll never know.
That's true.
If you don't go, you'll never know.
I can always walk out if I make sure I sit on an aisle seat.
Yeah, that's the plan I'm adopting.
Sit in the middle of it and then, excuse me.
Or just cover your back and just don't go. Just don't go to the...
They normally show the Slayers films, actually, at different aisles, like each time a new one's coming out. Because I do remember seeing Slayers Premium was shown.
I definitely saw the whichever one we just mentioned, which I've now forgotten, the Gollum one at Anaya in the 90s. Great. Yeah.
But Premium was interesting as well because it was the first Slayers film that had... it was Lena and Gowri and co, and Naga was also in it.
Yes. But Amelia and Naga still did not meet. Yeah, I saw that at Anaya as well.
They still didn't meet.
Yeah, I saw that at Anaya as well. There we go.
What did you think of Naga's laugh, Askew?
Just what you'd expect from an English dub of that time. I don't know, it just feels like... It all feels very...
Oh, you watched the dub as well, did you?
Yeah, okay. I watched the dub.
I think you might have got a bit more enjoyment if you'd watched the Japanese. Because it has got... The two main characters have really good voice actors. And you're not getting the same effect. The glass-cutting laugh. So much.
I think the laugh is still... It's still very similar in the dub from what I remember.
But I don't think you're getting the full effect without Megumi Hayashibara as Lena Inverse, who will be the subject of our game.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, which we can move on to if nobody has anything else to say about Slayers the movie. As I say, there's not much to be said.
Very short plot.
Any favourite scenes, Gary Anthony?
No, I think you've kind of covered them. The whole thing with the different... Each character being the ex-strongest in the village kind of thing. That kind of stuff. And I think, if I remember correctly, didn't one or two sneak up on them when they're in the hot spring? And then they kind of get blasted without Lena even looking at where they are sort of thing?
I know what my least favourite scene is.
What's that?
That weird... that villain, the one in the hot spring, he was grim. It's perfectly fine him summoning the big dragon and stuff. That looks pretty good. But him, he's got like stars covering his nipples and his belly button.
He's Kamala.
But oh, he's a grim. I thought it was someone out of like Enmacun or something. He was like one of the weird, bizarre. Demon thing.
He's like a weird. He dresses like a stage magician as well. Apart from the fact that he has stars over his nipples
and belly button.
Belly button. Yeah.
Bizarre place to hide.
But yeah, there's some nice animation. That fight particularly has got some nice animation.
Oh yeah. It's...
For a film of it seems to get cheaper when they go the further they get into the movie, so I don't know whether they splashed out on the comedy action early on, and so the takedowns of the demons like later are just like one frame evaporations. Okie dokie. So my game is called, borrowing from Little Britain, it's called Star in It, Write the Theme Tune, Sing the Theme Tune.
Oh,
because
goodness.
Megumi Hayashibara is the Dennis Waterman of anime. She often stars in an anime, sings the theme tune of the anime, and also sometimes writes the theme tune of the anime. So I'm going to give you the name of an anime, and you need to tell me which of the three things she did. So it might be all of them, it might be one of them, it might be two of them. It's never going to be none of them, though.
Oh, good. That's
Okay, so Gary, you're first. You say, I'm going to say star in it, and you say yes or no. And if you get it wrong, it's handed over.
Right. Well,
oh, okay.
But if you say star in it and he says no, and that's wrong, that means I get a point. Or do you just go on the next?
Just go to the next one. You get to say, okay. Okay, Gary.
Yeah.
Magical Shopping Arcade of Benobashi. Did Megumi star in it?
Yes.
No. Anthony, nice. Did she write the theme tune?
Yeah.
No. Gary, did she sing the theme tune?
Well, she must have done it. She didn't do the other two.
Yes, you're correct. Okay, Anthony, Invincible Champion Troy Zenon. Did she star in it?
No.
She did.
Oh.
Gary, Invincible Champion Troy Zenon. Did she write the theme tune?
No.
She did. Anthony, did she sing the theme tune?
No.
She did.
I didn't think she...
Is it, how is it possible we're getting so many answers wrong when it's a 50-50 chance?
Gary, Neon Genesis Evangelion, did she star in it?
Yes.
You're correct. Did she write the theme tune?
Yes.
No.
Damn.
Fly Me to the Moon. She's not that old. Anthony, did she sing the theme tune?
Yeah, she did. She did one of the ones, yeah.
Yes. Okay, Anthony, Sabre Marionette J. Did she star in it?
Yes.
Yes. Did she write the theme tune?
Yes.
You're correct. Did she... No, sorry, no, she didn't write the theme tune. That's wrong.
Oh,
okay, that's... Gary, did she sing the theme tune?
I'm going to say yes.
Yes. Okay, Gary, Slayers, did she star in it?
She did.
Did she write the theme tune?
I believe she did.
Yes, and did she sing the theme tune?
Yes, she did.
Okay. Okay, Gary, Ranma 1/2, did she star in it?
It's
okay,
me.
Sorry, Anthony.
Stocking up on points there,
Anthony. It's Ranma 1/2.
Did she star in it?
Yes.
Yes. Did she write the theme tune?
No.
Correct. Did she sing the theme tune?
Yes.
That is correct. Gary, yes. Cat Girl Nuku Nuku, did she star in it?
No.
That is incorrect. She was Nuku Nuku, I do believe. Okay, Anthony, did she write the theme tune?
Yes.
No.
Oh.
Gary, did she sing the theme tune?
Such confidence. I'm going to say she did.
Yes. Okay. Anthony. Shaman King, did she star in it?
Yes.
Did she write the theme tune?
No. No, yes, yes.
I'll take your first answer.
Yes. Damn it.
Gary, did she sing the theme tune?
Yes.
Yes, you're correct. Now it's yours, Gary. Sabre Marionette J, J2X.
Oh, God.
Did she star in it?
Yeah.
Yep. Did she write the theme tune?
No.
No, she did this time. And Anthony, did she sing the theme tune?
Yes.
You're correct.
Yes.
Anthony, Alfred J. Quack.
Oh, this red heron again.
Again? This is the first time.
I've heard that name mentioned before. Yes, she did star in this.
She did, yes. Did she write the theme tune?
Yes.
No. Gary, did you sing the theme tune?
Yes.
That's correct. Okay, and Gary, this is your final one. Lost Universe, did she star in it?
She did.
Did she write the theme tune?
I believe she did.
And did she sing the theme tune?
I believe she did that too.
That is correct. Okay, Anthony, you have no chance of winning, but you can take back your pride. Love Hina, did she star in it?
Yes.
That is correct. Yeah. Did she write the theme tune?
I'm trying to think what the theme tune was. I used to love the show. Yes.
Yes, that is correct. And did she sing the theme tune?
Yes.
That is correct.
Yes!
And that is how you play. Star in it, write the theme tune, sing the theme tune. And Gary is the winner.
Hooray!
And you may have noticed that she sang all of those. Because I couldn't find many where she appeared. Well, I could only find one where she sang and didn't appear, and I could find none where she appeared and didn't sing.
Oh, wow. That's...
It must have saved money.
I'm sure there are some, but I couldn't find them from looking at.
Yeah, there's this part in the... Well, they probably tell it. There's this part in the film or the series where the lead character sings a song, record it, and then they use that as a theme.
And also, it's kind of... I think after a certain point, she started co-writing all her songs. So it's like the early stuff, she was just singing what she was given, but the other stuff she was getting a songwriting credit on. Rightio, Gary, anything you want to plug?
No, not really. People can follow me on Twitter, at Gary Hedges. And that's about it.
Good, good. Anthony, how about you?
Just Twitter. Twitter is normal. Antaskew. And that's it.
You're not twitching anymore?
No, I've got some good medication. I've sorted that out. I want to get back into streaming, but I'm busy trying to do everything. There's just not enough hours in the day.
Are you playing your League of Legends?
I'm still playing League of Legends. I've stopped playing Civilization 5, which is a very bad move.
That sounds like a big time drain.
Oh, I know. Tell us about it.
It's against real people as well.
Hmm?
Against real people.
Hello?
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 Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
I think we've lost him. I can hear you.
You can hear me?
Yeah, I can't hear Anthony.
Okay. We've lost somebody. Him.
That was weird.
It was.
Oh, there you are.
That was very strange. It suddenly put me in offline mode.
Okay.
And everything else was fine. You were asking about Civilization 5, I think.
Yes, are you playing against human beings?
I shall be shortly, once I learn how to play properly. Because at the moment, I'm still new to the whole Civ universe. But it's kind of fun.
You need to get Darkstalkers for your Xbox.
Darkstalkers, isn't that the... What's that got to do with Civilization?
It hasn't anything to do with it, but it's a beat 'em up.
Oh.
You know Darkstalkers. It's the game that Morrigan and Felicia are from.
Sometimes I think you said Darksiders. Yeah, I do. Is it out on Xbox Live Arcade now?
It is, yeah. HD version. It's called Darkstalkers Resurrection.
Oh, yeah. I'll pick that up. I forgot it was out, so thanks. That's good. And that's all I've got to plug.
Good, good. I think at this point, that post on Golden Anniversary blog, when you hear this, should be up. Maybe. Let me just check what year it's on at the moment. Because I think he was trying to do two a week. Okay, 1992 is currently up as I'm recording this. But when was that uploaded? That was uploaded... that was still uploaded last month. So maybe my 1994 post won't be up yet. Go on, have another look. See if it is there yet. When it is up, you'll be able to find out about it on my Twitter, which is awesome_engine. And you might also find it on my own blog, which is awesome-engine.com. What you can find up is the as-promised Himi-chan's ribbon, which I have finally put up. And as always, you can find this podcast on dynamitingthebrain.com, on facebook.com/dynamitingthebrain, and on iTunes. So why not subscribe and write us a review so that more people can find out about the magic spell that is Dynamite in the Brain. Goodbye!
Goodbye!
Bye-bye!
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.